measured. We'll agree to that. But occasionally, he throws us little nuggets and says, all right, you're responsible for this little part of the world, and I'll give you some tools that you can measure a few things. So we are all stewards of that. But now, how many of you have seen the movie Moneyball? Anybody, most of you seen that? That movie is right up my alley because I love the numbers aspect of it. But what makes the numbers come alive in that movie in particularly is the stories behind the numbers. You get to know some of the players. You get to know the general manager, Billy Beane, and his story that led him to be the GM of the Oakland A's. All that stuff is really cool. And what makes those numbers come to life is getting engaged with those stories. You know that there's something behind those numbers. That's what keeps you captured in the movie. And that is true for any number, in my estimation, no pun intended, in my estimation, thank you, any number that inspires or compels, it's because there is a story behind it. There's something personal behind it that really grabs your attention. For instance, if I just throw out an organization and say, hey, I know of an organization that has 1.2 million customers, and they each pay a monthly fee, you might think, oh, well, that company is doing well, and that's interesting, but there's nothing inspiring about it. There's nothing compelling about it until I tell you that the organization is Compassion International, and you think, 1.2 million kids are having their lives changed because someone made a choice to give to them, change their life. And many of you know that is true because you are part of Compassion International. You have chosen a child to impact them, impact the trajectory of their lives because of what you do every month. For me, it became really personal. I had the opportunity to go to Africa, not related to Compassion International. This is 4 years ago now, on an unrelated trip. And my wife and I sponsor a kid there in Africa, on the east side of Africa, named Napoleon. And 2 weeks before I go on my trip, I think, well, gosh, I probably should have tried to connect with Napoleon somehow on this trip, even though I don't know if I have the time to do that or whatever. I need to figure it out. Well, it turns out Napoleon lived 5 hours away from where I was going to be, barrier one. And upon closer look of the Compassion International website, which was a bigger problem, they want you to give like 3 months in advance. I mean, this is a big deal, and it's an international person coming, and they've got to make arrangements to get a kid somewhere. So 2 weeks out, you know, this schmuck's calling, hey, I'm just going to be in the Africa here in a couple weeks. Would you mind, and Philip, I can do a handheld if it's me. Okay. Yeah, no problem. So, anyway, I call them, and sure enough, they scrambled to sort of to make it happen. And here's what they did. Again, he's 5 hours away, and I'm with a team of people, so it's tough for me to break off. I don't really have transportation or the knowledge to really get to his village. So they a full-time Compassion International rep leaves his normal day job and comes with Napoleon to see me. And they hired a driver to drive them. So it's two adults that need to be paid, compensated for, and they've you know, broken away from their normal thing, and Napoleon. Another rule that Compassion has is if the child, you know, leaves, even with a Compassion rep, they cannot be out when it's dark, for multiple reasons. So because of the distance, because of his school schedule, they had to leave, spend the night somewhere, and then he spent the day with me. They had to spend the night again and drive him back. All this kind of in a two-week turnaround, lots of logistics involved. So I'm out there, and it's a mission trip we're on, and I'll get choked up even though it's 4 minutes, 4 years away. And so I'm out there. I think we're putting in a fence for this particular community. So I'm out there. It's 95 degrees out there. We're in, you know, shorts and t-shirts, just work. Somebody that I don't know and says, hey, are you Reggie? There's someone here to see you. You know, I'm expecting him, so I know he's coming. Oh, yeah. I put down my tools.
walk around the corner. Here's this kid, 8 years old, in a full suit. All right? Oh, no, it gets worse. All right? And so, I mean, for the next 4 hours, I'm like, just hold it together, hold it together. Enjoy the time with him. Don't lose it, you know? So he gets there, we're talking. I meet with the, Napoleon goes and plays soccer for a little while with some other kids that were in the area. And while he's doing that, the Compassion International rep is flipping through a notebook, just like this. He says, well, this is a record of your interaction with Napoleon. So they've got dates of when I sent letters and that sort of thing. But they've also, okay, and this is 2 years ago, your Christmas gift. That's what they used to purchase a mattress for Napoleon. He was sleeping on the floor for his whole life up until then. This is where you gave this amount. It provided an animal for their family. It's still generating food and income for their family. It's basically changed their family's life. Okay, okay. Like, where am I? You know, this is nuts. All right, and then here comes the kicker. I'm like, all right, I'm convinced all of you are actors now, and you're just trying to get me to sponsor 10 more kids. This cannot be true. So I brought a couple of gifts for Napoleon. Nothing big, a backpack, some school supplies, a little soccer ball, you know, things like that, $40 worth of stuff. And Napoleon, excuse me, thank you, Lord, says, oh, I have something for you, in his broken English. I got something for you too. And he gives me this item right here. That's a picture of him when he's much older now. Hey, I'll just give up. Can you give me a handheld? So he gives me this bowl. Oh, thanks, it's nice. And, you know, clearly a little craft that he had picked up at a little gift shop or from a vendor of some sort. He said, oh, thanks, you know, and it's got African culture, you know, written all over it. The handmade things, the giraffe there is clearly an African cultural deal that I could take back with me, which I was grateful for. He said, yeah, this is me. I'm the giraffe, you know, getting a drink of water or food to eat, and you are the bull. What? I gotta go. You know, it's like game over. Here's everything I've got. Like, whatever. You know, if I stop for 1 second to think that 1.2 million kids are sponsored at Compassion International, it'll blow my mind. When there's, you know, any number that inspires and compels, there's a story behind it. And the more personal the story, the more compelling the number will be. You all know this, and that's why you're in this breakout. Because nobody wants to measure things that don't matter. We don't want to waste our time doing that. We want to measure things that we know matters. And even if we don't know every story behind every number, we want to know that the stories represented in those numbers are the types of stories that we want to be happening. That's why we measure. So, that being said, to make relevant measurements, let's jump into our books. We're on page 43. We'll jump right into the outline, go through a few things. And right when we get near the end and you are tired, we'll have a little fun. We'll give some stuff away. Here we go. Roman numeral 1, measurements are not optional. You are doing measurements, whether you know it or not. They're not optional. We have to do them, and you are doing them. Letter A, without measurement, there can be no management. There can be no management. Another way of saying it, if you're not intentionally measuring it, you are not intentionally managing it. That is, if you've got no data about whatever it is that you know of, and you're relying on instinct or I feel like, that sort of thing, that's not managing. That's guessing.
right? There can be no management without measurement. In fact, number one, below that, as leaders, management is assumed. Like the people who report to us, the people we report to, our group leaders, our congregation, they are assuming that we are managing the organization. And just part of management is measurements. Number two, we cannot rely on anecdotes, opinions, and hunches. Though sometimes those things do factor in. I've kind of got a feeling that XYZ. Well, we need to listen to that. But we cannot rely on those things alone. And we see this in, I mean, you see this in your personal budget. For crying out loud, we see it in our fantasy football teams. We try to figure out what the past has told us so that we can make the best decisions for this coming Sunday. All right? So we do that in those types of things. Surely we should be doing this in our churches. Letter B, measurements give additional perspective to stories. We just saw an example of that with the Compassionate International deal. We tell the story, that's one thing, but you say numbers that represent that story, man, that's another perspective that we have in talking about those stories. Another way to say it is these two things below it. Metrics or measurements motivate the mind, and stories stir the soul. Measurements motivate the mind, stories stir the soul. And both of those things need to live both in harmony and in tension. A little bit. It's not a tension that you can solve, but there is a tension that exists. Before I was full-time doing the game show deal, I was on staff at one of our partnership churches. We started and ended briefly in a suburb outside of Detroit. Went up there. We learned a lot from the D. Okay, good to see you. And we started and we learned some expensive and valuable lessons about why it didn't work for us the way we were operating back then. This has been 8 years ago or so. Well, when we get there, I mean, there are people, like real people on the ground, ready for us to be there. They're in groups. They're ready to start. They're excited. One particular couple comes to mind. They're in their 70s, has spent their whole life in a traditional type model and thought, hey, we're not going to go out like that. We want to spend the rest of our lives being part of a place where unchurched people love to go. So sign us up. We're in. I mean, they changed a 50-year-old pattern to drop what they're doing and jump on board with us. And stories all like that. And people were taking steps closer to God. I mean, we were hearing great stories. But then there were the measurements. And Sunday morning rolls around, and there's 90 people in a 600-person facility. And if you've ever been to one of our church services here, you know that that's not conducive to our type of model. It's loud music. It's big. A lot of production. And if it's a lot of empty seats, and there's 12 seats between you and the next person, that's not conducive for an unchurched person to come in and just feel uncomfortable. It's like, well, we've got some great stories that we can't deny, but what do we do with these numbers? And what do we do with the lack of funding coming in? So we closed it. We never resolved the tension, but we had to do something with the measurements we were getting. So metrics motivate the mind, stories stir the soul, and you got to do something with both of those. And sometimes one has to outweigh the other for the sake of progress somewhere else. Some things that have worked for us, Roman numeral 2, and of course we're still learning in the process like everybody else, but I can tell you what we got so far, and we'll go from there. But letter A, establishing measurements must be a collaborative effort. It must be a collaborative effort. And that's tough for a lot of us numbers people, because I love sitting with spreadsheets and thinking, here's what we need to measure, and let me show you what I've done with this spreadsheet. And boy, we've got a great equation in this one. And we can get so lost in the weeds that we come up with something cool,
but we needed additional perspective to help us with the big picture and knowing what we needed to be measuring in the first place. It must be a collaborative effort. Now, for some of you, the idea of collaboration, I hope that's not true in your organization, but collaboration is a synonym for glacier speed decision making. I understand this, and we all have lived in that world. But let me encourage you that collaboration doesn't mean you need everybody's opinion. It means you need some quality people's opinion from several different levels of your organization. So not everybody, but somebody who can represent everybody. All right, so that's how we look at it here. For us, we look at two main user groups when we're trying to collaborate. We call them ministry and manager. That's kind of how we the terminology we sometimes use. Number one, ministry involvement offers the perspective of ownership. These are people that are on the ground. They are there Sunday morning. They're setting up. They're tearing down. They're shaking hands. They know what works on Sunday mornings. They know what's practical. They know what has tried and failed. They know what frustrates people. They are there hearing, seeing, smelling what's going on. So those are your ministry people. And then the manager involvement offers the perspective of oversight. These are people, they might spend a little less time with volunteers, but they spend more time budgeting the program or more time from a strategic oversight standpoint. They are the people who know how different ministries need to work together. So you need to have both. And some of you actually are both. Many of you probably actually are both. You've got some, you're vested as a minister of the environment and a manager of the environment. But it's very rare that you are wired to be both. You probably inherently think like one or the other. So my encouragement to you is get somebody else to be somebody to collaborate with when you talk about what you need to measure, how to measure your success, that sort of thing. Now, the results for us, we have a collaborative approach, and we do sort of across the board. It's really a great part of our culture, I feel like. What we have spit out as a collaborative approach for how we do our measurements, probably something similar to many of you do. We have two basic tools, and they're dashboards and surveys. The surveys, obviously, we use to gather feedback after events. Some of the main ones we capture, we really want to know what our new guests think of our Sunday morning services. And we also do a lot of surveys on our irregular events, things we do once a year, once every 6 months, that sort of thing, just to track how those things are going. I'll come back to that in just a little bit. At first, we'll talk about dashboards. Dashboards give snapshots of how our ministries are doing. Just snapshots, and we'll start with a discussion of that. Your dashboards must tie to the strategy. So step one is knowing the strategy of your organization. For us, our strategy, and I would say just corporately, your strategy needs to tie to your vision or to your mission, and your mission needs to tie to your vision. For us, North Point Ministries, our vision, as you've probably heard a couple times, is to create churches that unchurched people love to attend. Our mission is tied to that, and every one of our churches says that every Sunday is our mission is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. So we want people, whether they are at a negative 10 spiritually or at a 10 on the positive side. If you think you're at a 10 on the positive side, we've got another class for you. But we want people to take a step towards Jesus wherever they are in the process. And we feel like in doing that, in meeting people wherever they are, that is going to help us accomplish our vision of creating churches that unchurched people love to attend. And we have a strategy for accomplishing that vision and mission. And it's to create environments. We feel like God's going to do the heavy lifting. When it's all said and done, He is responsible for life change. But what we can do is create environments to make that as possible as we can make it. So we try to create environments where people are encouraged and equipped to pursue three vital relationships:
intimacy with God, community with those inside the faith, and influence with those outside the faith. So we're doing what we can to make environments where those three relationships are strengthened. When we put together surveys, when we put together dashboards, you can take it to the bank. It is going to tie to, are we strengthening environments where those relationships can possibly get stronger? That's it. That's what it comes down to for us, that strategy, creating those environments. Number two, measurements must be developed around a clear win and critical factors of success. A clear win and critical factors of success. We'll come back and talk about it in a second when I show you an example. Number three, we've hit on a little bit, but I want to give you another example, is make room for stories. We recently did a survey for our ministry, our online ministry, every Sunday at several times throughout the day. We broadcast our entire Sunday morning service, from the announcements to the music to the whole deal. And we got, you know, a pretty good following. And even from our own members of the congregation, who they'll come to church three times a month or whatever, or two times a month. And then one time the kids are sick, or it's just kind of a late Sunday, and hey, let's catch it online. Happens all the time in our culture. So that's going well. We also have another way we broadcast our messages, just the message only, and that is the TV show called Your Move with Andy Stanley. A number of cities, it may be in your city. How many have it in their city? Anybody? Yeah, several of you have it. Around the country, and it comes on in the time slot typically right after Saturday Night Live, and it's going well, surprisingly, so with that time slot. So our online ministry came across a story of a guy who started watching online because he caught the TV show, and that led him to our website and that sort of thing. But here's one story. It says, listen to this. Look, I'm gay, and I'm 50 years old. I've spent my entire life trying to treat people according to the values of Jesus. I was raised Catholic, and without fail, I have been rejected by every religious group I've affiliated myself with. Well, one day, I was too lazy to change the channel after Saturday Night Live, and I heard Andy Stanley speak, and this particular message was on finance. But what I heard was non-judgmental. Gradually, I found myself actually planning on seeing the Saturday Your Move show and actually scheduling Saturday night activities so that I would be able to see it. And I don't know if I'll stay. I'm still waiting for the rejection and condemnation. But I hope I can finally be welcomed. Now, we can talk about dashboards all day long. But you read that in a meeting to back up your numbers, man, that's going to send your web team into a frenzy and your TV people like, let's keep going. What other cities can we go after? Stories stir the soul. But we got to have measurements. They live in that tension and they live in harmony. And I mean, when they work together like this, when you've got great numbers and great stories, you're going to knock it out of the park. Let's see what one of our dashboards look like, just to give you guys a quick example. They are attached, and we'll just kind of camp out on this first page. It's the one that looks like this, several pages stapled together. Like I said, you can flip through it later and get more details as we go, but we'll look at this first page just for a second. But look, all of our dashboards, top left corner, have the mission for that particular part of our organization. And it all sounds something like to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. It's some sort of hybrid of that. So for the groups, it's to create small group environments where people connect relationally and grow spiritually. That's how we say it for groups. Hey, Philip, if you want, you can bump the lights up out in the house just a little bit. You guys need a little bit more light. Great, thanks. Secondly, look in the middle. You can see the measurable wins. We talked about dashboards have to have measurable wins and critical factors for success.
So our measurable wins in groups, we want people to participate. We want disconnected people to become connected. Leaders replace themselves, and leaders are retained. So any measurements we take on this dashboard need to tie to these critical factors of success. Another thing you notice there, the third column over, we have a target range. What do we define as success? How do we know if we're winning? How do we know if we're being successful at accomplishing these goals? Well, we have target range established, and some of them you notice it's not really something that can be measurable in a range. So you got an NA for one of those, but down below that second one down 50 to 70%, that is tied to what is our ratio of group attendance as it is compared to worship attendance. So people who regularly come on Sundays, what percentage of those of people are in groups? And we've got our target range for what we consider a win would be 50 to 70%. And people in church world will sometimes look at that and say, well, gosh, if you're all about groups, wouldn't you want like 90% or 100% of people coming through the door in groups? And some churches, that might be their goal for success. But remember, ours is tied to our vision. We want to create churches that unchurched people love to attend. So at any given Sunday, our goal is to have a large percentage of the people there. This is their first step or their first step back into a church environment. So it's unrealistic for us to think that week one they're going to jump into a 18-month commitment community group in someone's home. We want them here for a month or two or three or a year, just checking it out and taking a step whenever they're ready. So our Sunday morning environment needs to have a significant amount of people who are not in community. So for us, we found the sweet spot to be 50 to 70% to be a win for us and what we shoot for. And just to harmonize, again, metrics and story, we try to include a story tied to each of these dashboards, and you see there's one at the bottom. Again, that's what we talk about in meetings is stories, and that's what inspires us to keep going, and it works in conjunction with the numbers. So anyway, that's a little bit about the dashboard. Let's talk about surveys for a second. Letter C, surveys must be designed carefully. Must be designed carefully. That almost sounds too generic, but it is very important. We can't make surveys just because we are curious. It takes careful study on what you want to measure and why. And there's some other technical things to consider also. Number one, question sequence is very important. Very important. I'll give you an example here. You can pull this one out if you want to. It's the sheet that's blue and orange. Great. And these are just a couple. They are a couple surveys on our Sunday morning environment. And we'll focus on the one on the left, the survey of new guests. We are very curious as to what our new guests think about our Sunday morning environments. And you'll see, speaking to the sequence, we asked three very big questions right off the bat. Overall, what was your satisfaction? Just forget the details for a second. Just overall, what'd you think? Secondly, based on your experience, will you come back? And thirdly, based on your experience, would you recommend to a friend for them to come here? How'd you like it? Would you come back? And would you recommend it to somebody else? If we trimmed off the rest of that survey altogether, we would get incredibly valuable information on those three questions alone. There's studies about it you can look up online. These three questions will answer a lot about how you're doing. Did you like it? Would you do it again? And would you recommend it to somebody else? That'll get you down the road a pretty far way. So we strategically put these at the top of our survey, not buried in the middle and definitely not at the bottom, because here's why. If you ask detailed questions or demographic questions or things of that nature early on, by the end of the survey,
people can be a little bit tainted when they filled it out. Oh, another question, and it gets lumped into the, oh, another question category. And they might have a little bit of a negative bias by the time they get to the important questions. So right off the bat, what did you think? Just get that out of the way. So anyway, that's just a word about sequence being important. Number two, avoid compound questions. Don't try to find out two pieces of information with one question. And in our Theopraxis program, I have dropped the ball on this and have quickly corrected it. But we would ask people who have attended Theopraxis, was the teacher engaging and helpful? Well, they would get high responses, which is great. Well, which was it, though? Were they were they engaging or were they helpful? Because I can, in a monotone voice, spout off something incredibly helpful but not be very engaging. So we have now rewritten the questions. Was John helpful? Was John engaging? And they answer those questions separately now. So only one idea per question. Number three, use consistent language where possible. Consistent language where possible. So you want to be consistent with your scales, both within your survey and across the board. So organizationally, it's very helpful if everybody's on board with this. And we'll look at this one more time. And then we'll go to the next one, Phillips. So hold tight. But notice these, especially these top few questions back on this blue survey. How satisfied were you? And then the scale they have ranges from very satisfied all the way to very dissatisfied. Now, we've put some thought and research into how we are going to have people mark their feedback. And what we have, we've jumped on other people's shoulders on their research and landed on is a couple different things. One, you've got the choice between doing an odd scale or an even scale. We landed on an odd scale because there's always a middle number. So there's five choices and there's a middle number. So whether you're doing 3, 5, or 7, there's always going to be something in the middle that you give them people an opportunity to say, I'm not really sure, or I'm kind of middle of the road. But you could do an even number scale and force them either left or right. That's fine. That's not of great consequence. There's another handout you can look at, some more information on maybe what's best for your organization. But what I want to highlight is what we for sure landed on is the opposite, the counterpart of each scale needs to be exactly opposite. Notice at the top we have very satisfied, at the bottom we have very dissatisfied. So at the top, I wouldn't have something like poor, and the bottom have something like absolutely perfect. Those are a little bit out of balance. So you want every counterpart to be exactly the opposite in your surveys. So number four, know your necessary sample size. How many people need to fill out the survey before you can trust that the results are accurate? That's a really good question. And there is a scientific answer to that. You can look it online. Several places we've given you a handout with some cheating numbers on there, and you can look that if you want, or I can just talk about it. But we've given you sample population sizes, and these down this left column on that sheet would be how many people attended the event. That's what that represents. And so your question is, well, how many people need to fill out a survey if there were this many people at the event? And that second column shows you that number. And you'll see at the top line here, if 25 people were in attendance, you would want 24 people to fill it out if you wanted to be 95% sure, plus or minus 5%, that these results are accurate. So if only 25 people are there, I mean, you darn need to make sure about everybody fills it out. So you're going to have to pay them to fill out the survey on that one. But notice, you know, notice what the scale does. Let's skip down the middle of the road. 1,000 people. You want 1,000 people to find out how you did in a 1,000 people environment. 278 people should fill it out with a real high level of confidence that represents the entire room.
Skip at the bottom, 50,000. You just need 381 responses. So at your 50,000 environments, just 381 people need to fill that out, and you'll have 90%. Basically, 381, as long as everything is truly random in terms of me getting collecting surveys, I can give you the world once it gets to that point. Anyway, so that's important to know. Let's see. What's next? Let's look at letter D. What? There's a five? Okay. Survey as soon as possible to ensure reliable results. Surveys are like new cars. As soon as they drive off the lot, things deteriorate quickly, including the value. All right? So as soon as people start, you want to get people to fill out the survey while the event is fresh on their mind. As their memory fades, two things happen. The results are less accurate, and they are less frequent. You will not get as many people to fill out the survey if you wait for a week to give them the survey to fill out. So my advice, especially if you're doing something online, SurveyMonkey or whatever, if people are doing an email registration for your event, go ahead and set up the survey before the event even happens. Lock it in. Add email addresses as you need to. But just set your timer on the SurveyMonkey to go out the morning after your event's over. That way you're not even thinking about it. Or if something happens and you're not able to do it, it's already done well in advance, and it's triggered to go off when you want it to go off, and you don't forget about it. But critical. Let's see. Let's talk about Section D before we give some stuff away. Remember the tactical. Some tactical things we want to talk about here. Number one, of course, I've looked at this talk a good number of times. If there's one sentence, it would probably be this that I would say. If you can't or won't, then don't. If you can't or won't, then don't. That is, if you're unwilling or unable to make a change, don't measure it. Who cares? Only measure the things that you care about doing something with or that you're able to do something with. If you cannot finish the sentence, hey, we're going to measure this, and if numbers are really low here, then we need to consider, I mean, if that sentence is not in your repertoire, don't even measure it. Measure things that you can do something with. If you can't or won't, then don't. Number two, when relevant, when you can, use ratios 100% of the time. This is going to go a long way in how you compare how different ministries, how different departments are doing. For us, it's critical because we've got 6 churches in the area, and they're all at very different stages of growth. So we have to rely on percentages for satisfaction levels and return levels and that sort of stuff. We look at percentages to compare those, so do that. Number three, track over time to establish targets. We looked at the dashboard earlier, and we had a target range that we consider a success rate for us. Well, those are not made up, and they don't happen immediately. It takes time, just similar to you doing your home budget. If you've never budgeted before, it's very difficult to create a budget on the spot. You have to track where you've been and look where you've spent the last 6 months to know, okay, I see now that this is troubling. So let's call this a target range, and you've got some data based on past performance to do that. So track over time to establish targets. And not everything is going to have a target. You saw one NA on the dashboard there, something like baptisms. You may not have a target to say, we've got to have this many to be successful. I mean, some things it's just not appropriate or relevant even to track in that way. Number four, don't marry your metrics. Don't marry your metrics. That being said, what I mean by that is, if you're measuring something and you don't like the results it's producing, just change it. Like, it should be an ongoing process of, well, that's not quite, it turns out that's not really measuring what we thought we meant for it to measure in the first place. We'll change it. Or 3 months, 6 months, a year in, you've been measuring the same thing. It's been unsuccessful, unsuccessful, or not what you want, not what you want, and you realize that it's never going to change. It's never going to change. Stop measuring it. Stop measuring it. Don't marry your metrics. Just because you got a nice dashboard, it looks nice and neat, things are in order, and you spend a lot of time on it, man, delete a row in a heartbeat if you don't need it. Don't marry your metrics. Now, date them seriously, okay, because they're important. But don't hitch your wagon to them so much that you lose sight of, hey, we don't need to do this anymore. Or let's rethink what we are trying to accomplish with this measurement in the first place. And is there another way to ask a similar question? So that's what's going on there. Now, a few things, points, we'll get to number four. But before we do that, we're going to let you take a break. Like, I know you're here for 2 days, and it is one fire hydrant after another right in your face. So sometimes we just need to pause, have a little fun. So speaking of combining stories and statistics, we're going to combine your stories with some statistics. So before you came in, there was a way, and I'll talk for just a second, and it only takes 30 seconds. So if some of you need 30 seconds to do this, you can still do it. If you don't, it's okay. We asked you to go to tinyurl.com/10tossups. We asked you 10 questions, all of them fun in nature, unless you took a couple of them a little too seriously. Then we'll talk after about that. But what I'm looking for is the most normal person in the room. All right, you may think that's you, and we will find out. Here's what I want everybody to do. Just stand up right where you are, if you don't mind. And we're going to go over these questions. Now, even if you didn't fill out the survey, you can play along. So everybody can stand up, yeah, stretch out a little bit. Don't hit anybody. I'm going to go over these questions, and I'll give some results. If you would have answered or did answer this in the majority, you get to remain standing. Otherwise, the group will look at you as a weird person, and you just have to have a seat and sit in that odd moment. Here we go. So the first thing we said is, do you prefer y'all or you guys? 63.5% says y'all. So if you are, yeah, if you're a northerner, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Oh, here we go. Now, this next one is a landslide. We call this a landslide victory. Oh, no, once you're down, you're down. You know, that's a great question and a great try. Cats or dogs? Please. I don't even want to just, if you're a cat person, just, if you're a cat person, we want you to leave the room, and you, no one is going to tell you the rest of the answers. 88.5% dog. All right. Here we go. It's getting interesting here. Country or pop? That was 58.8% pop. 58.8% pop. All right. Oh, here we are. We're getting somewhere. Then we're getting personal. Joel Osteen or Rob Bell? All right. So that's easy on the commentary. This is recorded, and we will track your voice. Okay, 62% Rob Bell. 62% Rob Bell. And he just got one clap. I heard someone just get one clap. One clap. Joel Osteen. All right, 64% Facebook over Twitter. All right. What are we down to? Oh, man. You look normal, people. You normal, right? Neck tattoo or nose ring? Someone asked me today how much money it would take for me to get a visible neck tattoo that I could never remove. All right, I could choose what it is, but it's going to be there forever. I could never remove it. I landed on about $200,000. That's worth paying for my house, all right? Because that's, anyway. 56.9% neck tattoo. tattoo. Oh, we lost a couple. Got a couple nose ringers. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. Is it just you four? All right. Crowder or Tomlin? That's a ball game right there. 53.1% Tomlin. Tomlin. We lost. Oh, we have one normal person in the room. All right. Nice job. What's your name, man?
Chris.
Chris, where are you from?
Northern Virginia.
Actually, Chris, we're not going to. I'm just kidding. That sounds normal. Chris, you choose Chipotle or Chili's?
Chili's.
Boom. Nice job. Give Chris a round of applause right there. All right. Very good. I just made up all those numbers, so that's not true. Not true. All right. Let's wrap it up. And then we'll do some Q&A. Number four, don't make decisions on measurements alone. We've already hit on that a little bit. Measurements are data points. That's it. That's all they're designed to be, is data points. They're not determinants on what you do. You determine what you do, or your team determines what you do. Measurements are just that. They are measurements. Now, there are times, though, when we look at our dashboards and we see the numbers and think, that's not what we want. There's a gap between what we are hoping for that to be and what it is. And we have to do something with that gap. Now, for us, where our default is a collaborative model, it would be very easy for us to look at those numbers and say, boy, that's a 20% less satisfaction rate than we were hoping for that environment. Jeremy, come here. Let's talk about it. What is it that do you feel like you did that blah, blah, blah? Or we had suggestions earlier on. Why didn't you listen to Lucy? And we wouldn't. Dashboards are not personnel evaluation tools. They are numbers. That's all they are. They're measurements. So you have to do something, though, when there are gaps between what you were expecting and what the numbers actually said. The language you use in our environment is we choose trust over suspicion. We trust everybody's doing a great job. We trust everybody is working hard. We only hire quality people, so we know you're here because we love you. So this dashboard is not an attack on how you're doing. This is just a conversation starter for how we can do it next time. That's all it is. So one thing we do when we approach these gaps is letter A, we open conversations. It's an opportunity to open conversations. We use these dashboards to ask follow-up questions. Hey, what do we think happened here? What do we think was the contributing factor for these numbers? Letter B. We start explorations. What are some things we could do next time? Who's got ideas on what to do? Again, you got to have the right people in the room for these conversations, but start explorations. One area, I'll just give you one quick example for us, where we saw a gap is in our group's dashboard. Why aren't people who are regularly coming on Sunday mornings getting into groups? That's a fair question. We're a church of small groups. We want people into community groups. And two things surfaced out of some surveys we did. One, it was a huge step for a lot of people to go from the Sunday morning environment to a 12 to 24 month commitment. So just the time of that, 3 times a month for a year, I mean, it just seemed like a lot. And the other thing, certain people were like, well, what happens in these groups? What do we talk about? Is it a Bible study for a year? Is it going to get real? Is somebody going to get really in my business for a full year? Tell me what we talk about. So the time commitment was one thing, and the topic was another. That led to conversations. Led to, well, what can we do to bridge that gap a little bit? Because clearly enough people are having difficulty going from A to what it seems like a very distant B. So the idea of our short-term groups was born. Well, Would you sign up for a 6 to 8 week commitment? Same type of deal. It's in someone's home. You're going to get to know people. But 6 to 8 weeks, and it's going to be on finance, or it's going to be on marriage, or it's going to be on dating or something. We've picked some topics that we feel like are culturally relevant. Would you want to sign up for one of these? Just 6 to 8 weeks. Well, we saw a bump in that. So that's, again, but we went through this process. We open the conversations. We start explorations. Then, letter C, benchmark standards. Is there anybody else out there doing this well? That we can ask questions, find out information, and hey, you're doing a great job at this. What are some standards we should put in place that could help us get to that point as well? Find some standards and go with it. Benchmark standards. And letter D, celebrate successes. That ties into stories stirring the soul. You know, every staff meeting, without fail, every North Point staff meeting and at all of our churches, we begin our staff meeting with two things. The first is anybody new on staff, any staff changes. Immediately after that, hey, anything happened this last week or so, somebody wants to tell us that reminds us why we do what we do. Inevitably, there is a high school kid that came to know Christ, or a small group leader, something significant happened in their life and they needed their community group to come around them. And it reminds us all of why we do what we do. So don't forget that these numbers represent stories and that they need to celebrate the successes. It just keeps us going.